May 11, 2020 is the Watt for Pedro show. For Pedro show, happy Monday, people. Brother Matt, we're still in quarantine mode, so he's at the Love Grotto in Pleasure Point, 3 miles south of me, but he's here in spirit. I'm not totally man alone, though, because of those engineers in Estonia with their Skype software. I got Nika with me. Welcome aboard. Oh, I should say,
we
started the show off with John Coltrane doing impressions, because that's what I got from hearing your stuff. Many impressions. And then Lady in the Radiator, which I have to say, in the 70s, late 70s, I saw this movie called Eraserhead, and there was a lady in the radiator.
Quite literally.
Yeah, did you ever see that? It might have been David Lynch's first movie. I don't know. But
That's one of my favorite movies.
Man, is it strange. The bottom line I got out of it was even the most smooth whatever together thing, if you look close enough, there's pits, there's dirt, there's grime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was great. And, God, the main guy, Jack.
Jack Nance?
Yeah, Jack Nance. He reminded me of Jack Brewer, who sang for Saccharine Trust. He was beaten to death at a donut shop or something. Terrible.
Jack Nance?
Yeah, but he got home, and then then he died.
Yeah, he had some really, really tragic death.
I think he was beat in a donut shop, or outside of it.
Horrible way to go. Yeah. Jesus Christ. From playing, you know.
You know who else was beat?
Being in Racerhead, Twin Peaks.
You know who else was beat? Not killed by the beaten, but right after. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but his manager, man, told me, Paul Smith. Alan Vega, a suicide.
Really?
Yeah. He was, you know, in his late 70s or something on the sidewalk and some altercation. And I mean, who would beat an old man?
Seriously.
Yeah,
the 70s sound like there was a lot of brutality, a lot of street brutality going on.
No, he was in his 70s. This just happened in the 2000s.
Oh, I thought you said it was in the 70s. I was like, oh, damn, man.
Yeah, I think that's when they got the band together. In fact, I got to meet him because they opened up for the Stooges. When we did that Raw Power thing at the Odeon, and he told me, you know, he was an artist, a sculptor, a painter, or something, but he saw Stooges at Max's Kansas City, and he thought, wow, I want to be in a band too. Yeah, I mean, that's the power of the movement, you know, and people like Ig and the Stooges and Cat Beef, this kind of thing, I think, like, brought people in. Anyway, to hear it from the man himself. There's a song off the first Suicide record. It's called Frankie Teardrop. It's one of the most scary songs in the world. And it's just a voice and a keyboard, you know?
That was what kind of got me to start making music.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. You know, I think even Bruce Springsteen started using the suicide. He said, a guy like that said suicide was big in his thing. And I think he was using a song when the gig was over, so.
Have you heard Nebraska? His album Nebraska, that's kind of inspired by suicide a little bit, and actually includes a suicide cover.
I think that's the tune.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense, because that's, you know, some guy brought me to a gig of his. It was like 4 hours long, and I conked out and shit. But I remember he played a song where he was the only guy singing with it, and it was from that. Everything come back someday, you know, some stuff like that. Atlantic City, or I don't know, but it was, the record was, I was told by the guy who brought me, was called Nebraska.
Yeah.
And it was kind of really econo, no big, you know, 30 guys in sweaters. That's the stuff I saw. So anyway, I want to talk about you, your music journey. What's your earliest, Nico, what's your earliest music recollection?
Honestly, so my dad, he was into, like, new wave, and, you know, I'd seen the Dead Kennedys and stuff, like, you know, as a kid or whatever. And so he listened to a lot of punk and new wave and stuff when he was working out. And for some reason, my brother and I would be hanging out in the weight room with him or in the basement, like, you know, while he's lifting weights. And we'd be listening to, like, Squeeze or Talking Heads or Oingo Boingo, Joe Jackson, that kind of stuff. So my earliest music memories are with Talking Heads, probably, very specifically, or the band Squeeze or Oingo Boingo.
Wow, the second man just – we were asked to do a tribute to Squeeze, and it was called Strangest Inquintessence or something. And I did fuzz bass, and I didn't know much about it. But was your pop just a listener, or did he play too?
No, he definitely just listened. Okay. Yeah. So I don't really come from a musical family.
Yeah, I was going to ask. The pad you grew up in, what town?
You know, Nowheresville, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Middle of Wisconsin.
A lot of cheese. What do you call it?
A lot of cheese.
Before it's aged, though, what's it called? Curds.
Oh, hell yeah.
And Greg Norton, Greg Norton from Husker Du taught me they're good when they squeak on your teeth.
He's right. He is correct.
And my favorite that I found on tour, I always get a sack when I'm going through, is with dill and garlic.
Oh, yeah. You're doing it right. You're doing it right.
Okay, so there's no instruments in the pad, or did your brother play?
My brother eventually, well, I got really interested in singing. Because it was like my first way of being able to make music is just by singing. And so then I enrolled in like piano lessons as like a little kid. And then, voice lessons and then violin and then guitar. And then, you know, my brother was also playing guitar. So
can I ask you about the piano thing? Because we've had a lot of people on the show. It can be really good experience to really shitty.
And it was shitty.
Yeah. It seems like it's dependent on the teacher.
Yeah, and also I feel like you've got to be one of those kids that's really committing to like learning technique. And I just wanted to make noise and make sound and be creative, and so I couldn't focus on the real nuts and bolts. So it was wasted on me. Okay. All those lessons were wasted on me.
What about the school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
I was in the choir, you know, I of course, as someone that liked to sing, I liked to be involved in things where I could sing, so choir or, like, musicals.
Well,
stuff
I asked
like
that, Mika. I asked that because a lot of schools cut the music and arts programs out.
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre. It's like, where are we going to learn how culture is made? I think we're going to quickly realize, like, once we recycle all of the culture from the past, like, century,
yeah,
or the couple centuries, we're going to end up hitting this wall where it's like, whoa, we've resampled in everything into oblivion. No one knows how to play music anymore. So then we're just killing off music quite slowly. But so maybe that's a little extreme.
We'll bring the programs back to the schools.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay. Okay. Can you remember the first record you bought yourself?
I think it was... So the first record I bought myself, I think, was A Kick Inside with Kate Bush.
Oh, wow.
I think the first record, though, that I ever owned was the record You by Gong, because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my friend that sold me my record player,
yeah,
he was like, hey, take this. And he gave me, like, a Gong record, and I was just like, whoa.
That's trippy stuff. That's some 70s.
It's cool.
Yeah, some prog.
Yeah.
What about first gig you went to?
Britney Spears. I'm a 90s baby, so no, Britney Spears. I had a pop, you know, I say this like I'm embarrassed, but I'm really proud of being, like, having that aspect of my childhood, being such, like, a 90s pop culture child, where it's, like, all those, like, diva singers and everything were really, really, like, inspiring to me, because they were, like, people using their voice, and they're, you know, and they were being able to do all this crazy stuff with their voice. I mean, not Britney Spears, but God bless her. She's still the best. But,
yeah, she's, the Disney, right? With the dancing and, you know what it ended up, this, from Korea to K-pop. I think they're the ones who've really taken that all the way. Where you start him out really young, right? And he's kind of training things. But can I tell you the first gig I went to, being a 70s, because I'm 13 in 1970. So me and D. Boone saw T-Rex.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now, his voice was trippy, right?
That I love T-Rex. Yeah, man, that's a great first concert.
$2.50.
Where was this?
The Long Beach Auditorium, right across the bridge here. And San Pedro's in the harbor, the western part of the harbor of Los Angeles. So right across the bridge was, it's called, they tore it down. You know what was filmed there was all these Don Kirshner rock concerts, if you remember this TV show.
No.
Okay. You don't have to. He's the guy who created the Monkees, but he had this stupid show in the 70s where he had, well, it wasn't stupid, because bands would play, which was kind of unusual then, yeah. And they were filmed there. But $2.50, because concerts in those days were more like promotion to help sell records.
Yeah.
It wasn't an industry unto itself. So, you weren't in the marching band, but were you in any kind of groups in school?
Well,
the choir, you said.
Yeah, and I was also a competitive singer. So, as a classical singer or opera singer, I would go to these, state and national competitions, and they would rate how well you sing. And
wow.
So that, really crushed my spirit from a very young age. Yeah.
Right.
Competitive singing is, the best way to just ruin your relationship with music and your own personal vocal instrument, immediately.
But Nika, whose idea was this?
Mine, okay, because I just wanted to be, I wanted to go to Juilliard, and I wanted to become an opera singer, and so I was like, I need to, do all the whatever I can do to be able to sing and to be able to expand my craft and to, really, become a better singer. And so my voice teacher enrolled me in these competitions, which were very normal, you know, but very quickly, it demoralized me to the point where I stopped singing for quite a few years.
Man, I want to play here Sea Talk.
Thank you. Somebody's gotta be the last man standing.
Watt for Pedro show. Yeah, C-Top, Zola Jesus. After that bilge pump out of Leeds, England, with Brown Ale for Sister Sarah. Lauren out of New York, Sega Sunset. Thurston Moore Group, Maydays. Thurston lives now in London. Hackney Park. Yannick South. I love that name. I wonder if Thurston knows. I got to ask him. But the Tell Me Why, brand new. Darcy Electronics, brand new. Both these, I think Yannick South's an Italian man. Hamburg. Swenson Clean out of Canada with Four Winds. Bark out of Knoxville. Last Man Standing. Also from Knoxville. Oh Man, Fuck You. Or Omfu. A bit of guitar to close out the side, Clyde. He used to be in a Deer Hoof for a bit, Steve Gigante. And then finally, Pilot Light, Zola Jesus. The Pilot Light, oh man, those are scary. These heaters, yeah, because the Navy housing, when I came to Pedro, I remember we hit CB's bills, the Little League field, so we're doing this game, and we hear this thing, we see this thing fly up, and then we hear the boom like 5 seconds later, and the pilot light had blown out from a heater, and then the gas all built up, and it blew the roof like 50 feet.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's scary. Yeah. Holy shit.
So as soon as I saw the title and then listened to your tune, I was thinking about that when I was a boy. So what about the thing? You know, you said you had a singing teacher. How'd that happen?
Yeah.
Was that your idea?
Yeah. So I was obsessed with singing. I loved singing. And then I found in the back of a Rolling Stone magazine that there was an advertisement to get, like, singing tapes, like cassette tapes, where you could learn how to sing. It was, like, someone just peddling, like, snake oil. And then before I was, like, filling out the thing to order them, and then my mom comes in the room, and she's like, what are you doing? And I told her, and then she was like, that's a waste of money. Let's actually try to find a singer around here, or teacher around here that can help you. So I was like, I don't even remember, 7, 8 or something. I was in elementary school, and so she enrolled me in voice lessons, and then I basically never stopped. Until I the singing competitions, like, you know, ripped the joy out from under me, and then I stopped singing for that.
Well, at least
but yeah,
she didn't dress you up for like them beauty pageant things, you know.
No. It was just pure.
But
it was
still,
just pure laser precision criticism.
Nika, what about this trip? Like after school, the bedroom or a garage or basement bands. Did you ever do any of that stuff?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Except I had a problem where I didn't believe in myself. So then it made it really hard for me to, like, jam with people. Because, you know, to jam, there's, like, a level of confidence you need to have in what you're doing. But I didn't have that. So then, you know, so then my brother would jam with his friends, and then I would basically just watch or, you know what I mean, just jam on my own.
Yeah, jamming, I'll tell you something trippy. I think this is with some classical musicians, but I've had people on the show, like that lady whose crap top Brit we were talking about. She's an incredible musician, but she can't improvise. You got to give her the music.
It's hard. It's so many different parts of the brain. Like, and that's something that I've realized becoming more autonomous as a musician. Like, I produce my own stuff. I write my own stuff. I perform my own stuff. And then it's just like, you got to be so many different things at once. And especially when you're technically trained, like you're coming from this angle where it's like whatever you're doing, it needs to be like excellent. Like you're aiming for excellence at all times. But then it doesn't give you room to fail if you're constantly like aiming for excellence. There's no like, and jamming is like, you got to kind of lay back and kind of feel things and be okay with failing and stuff, you know?
Sure. Yeah, cut yourself some slack. Can I ask you, if this is kind of a parallel. I got friend Petra. She's got perfect pitch. And I would think this was a great gift, but she says in a way it's a curse. Because everything is fucking out. So it's always annoying. She says even opening the door and the hinge squeaking is out of tune.
Oh, no. What a nightmare. You're just living in this nightmare where everything sounds horrible.
But like you're saying, you want everything to be technically right, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. When did you start writing your own songs?
In elementary school when I was about 7.
Wow.
You know, we did a recess. You know how you have recess, so you go outside and you play at the playground. everyone play with playing soccer, playing sports, or dicking around. I was on the swing set, and I had a little notepad, and I would, like, write songs.
Oh, man.
There.
Because I asked, because the way, in the 70s, the way we learned when we were boys, you copied records.
And that's a smart way of learning how to play music.
Yeah, but you don't learn how to write. You don't use music for expression, though. You just learn how to, like, build models.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It teaches you skills, though. It teaches you skills.
Yeah. I mean, look, whenever you play, you're getting ready for the next time you play. That's the philosophy I got into. So it's never wasted. But, man, just copying people. I mean, everyone we knew, we didn't know anybody who wrote their own songs. So you're doing this at 7, 8 years old at the swing set. That's bitching.
It's fun.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the products of the movement, because it really opened things up. Like, why not start a band? Why not write a song? And before that, like, where I grew up, no, you had to be certain kind of competence, certain kind, you know, come from Valhalla or Olympus or something.
I guess you're right. There, it felt more inaccessible in a way to be an artist, where maybe, right?
Yeah, just think about it, too. There's no clubs, Nika, so you're going to the arena rock shows. You can't, unless you've got a really good sense of ego. You're like, I'm going to be playing here? No, but a club, you can kind of imagine that a little bit more. Also, it'd be trippy, man. You know, you'd be watching the Germs, and they get done playing, and then Pat Smear is standing right next to you. That did not happen in arena rock gigs. Mark Bolan did not sit next to me when he got done playing.
Well, that's what was so sort of disillusioning about seeing Britney Spears, is I was, like, in the nosebleed seats in this arena.
Yeah.
And it was so unfulfilling. Like, it shattered me. It was kind of like seeing your idol, but seeing everything, like, it just was really crushing or heartbreaking, because it didn't feel real. I didn't get what I was going for, what I thought I would get out of it. Because those venues are so big, it's so depersonalized. Believe There's no intimacy. It doesn't feel, it's like I would have a better experience watching it on TV or something than actually being, you know, in seat like 135,000D or whatever, you know what I mean? Where you're just like, a baseball field.
I totally
field.
Know what you mean, Nika, because that was every one of my gigs until the fucking movement. I had never been to a club until, you know, somebody told me, this guy was, he was one of the bands, you know, and this is like 1977. Hey, there's this scene up in Hollywood where people write their own songs.
Whoa.
And we were like, whoa. And it was the first time all my gigs were like your Britney Spears gig.
Well, I can't fathom that. It's kind of like when
it's a blip in the timeline, because, you know, working with the Stooges, they told me in the 60s there was all kinds of garage bands and clubs. It was just this one weird thing in the 70s where rock and roll turned into this huge, you know, Nuremberg rally. So,
yeah.
You know, we're at the end of the first hour. Very interesting. May 11, 2020, Dish Wap Pedro Show, special guest Nika. Hold tight for hour two. May 11, 2020, it's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
Don't indicate oil into First patches that I ever worked on was this real hellhole in a particularly, shall we say, irreparable part of East Ham. It really shouldn't have been difficult at all. There was just a small block of two flats. They were situated above the entrance to a small dead-end car park in a place that never fully got sunshine, behind some shops in High Street. The car park and flats were mine to clean. And it shouldn't have been a chore to get the job done. However, there were several excessively off-putting factors that made my efforts somewhat irrelevant. I called it Shit Alley. Oftentimes, I'd be there picking litter or giving a little sweep, and some incredibly mixed-up zombie of variable age and sex would wander right up 10 feet from where I was cleaning, drop trowel, and proceed to take a big old crap on the pavement, as if I didn't exist. Keeping the floor clean was impossible. Every day of the week, there were needles and crack bong bottles, condoms and tampons, various types of booze container, freshly made chudner, the odd dead rat, and as many cigarette butts as there are stars in the universe. There were a cluster of 8 sheds at the far side of the car park, originally intended for the residents that lived in and above the shops. But they had been turned out and burned out so many times that the people didn't bother to use them anymore. The sheds, or rather the charred remains of them, became little shooting galleries. They were so full of needles that I refused to go in them, even with the right personal protective equipment. Inside the block, things weren't any better. On the first level lived a nice lady who seemed normal enough, and on the second floor lived a guy in his early 50s who had some kind of mental health issues. The poor guy and his home had been made the target of a local crack-dealing gang, who basically muscled their way into his flat and took it over. They were a nasty bunch. He would get run out of his place whenever they wanted to use it, and he was terrified to tell anybody. I'd enter into the small block through the front door, and all of his clothes and household stuff would be thrown down all the 4 flights of stairs, which you'd climb with a somewhat heightened sense of trepidation. Upon ascension to the top floor, most of the time, the door to the flat itself would be lying on the landing. It would always be slightly worrying to think that anyone at all could be in there, and from what I could see into the hallway of the flat, it had been smashed to bits. I would sometimes be cleaning in the block, and someone would be outside, buzzing and banging the door, trying to see if there was anyone in there to score off of. Because I wouldn't ever let them in. They'd start banging and kicking the door, shouting threats and abuse. I'd just walk upstairs till I was out of view and wait for them to give up and try somewhere else. Thankfully, they always did. That said, though, some asshole making pistol gestures to you with his fingers at the glass door whilst you're trying to finish a floor that you can see your reflection in is not something that was necessarily in the job description. One day, I arrived on site to find that the car park had been covered in police tape. The night before, something had gone bad in the flat, and a man was badly beaten and thrown out of the second floor window. It's always a downer having to clean up a puddle and sometimes blood or sweep up some poor bastard's teeth. In this case, I'd heard that the guy who went out of the window later died. As for the unfortunate lady who lived on the first floor, well, she had a boyfriend, but he was overseas in the army, so she was all on her own in the middle of all of this insanity. When she gave a statement to the police about what she'd heard the night of the window incident, the copper that was there taking it down made her an offer. He declared that the police would not be able to do a great deal to solve the problems on the block because of a lack of witnesses to the event, but that he, if she fancied going out for a good time with him, he'd have the police sort it all out in a click of his fingers. Real nice of him. Sadly, for the fine upstanding lawman, the lady on the first floor had no intention of having any kind of good time with him. So sadly for her, and myself to a lesser extent, there would be no resolution forthcoming. It has to be said that I did not miss Shit Alley when my tenure there came to an end. The only way you'll get it clean is with a gigantic fucking wrecking ball.
by the rain. I've been driven by snow. I'm drunk and dirty. Don't you know, but I'm still willing. And I was working on the road so late at night, and I seen my pretty Alice in every headlight. Alice, Dallas, Alice. I've been from Tucson to Tucumcari, Tatchapee to Tonopah. I've driven every kind of rig that's ever been made, and I've driven on a back road so I wouldn't get weighed if you give me weed, whites, and wine. Then he showed me a sign. I'll be willing to keep moving. You know, I smuggle some smokes and folks out of Mexico. I get baked by the sun nearly every time I go down to Mexico. But I'm still getting kicked by the wind and robbed by the sleet. I had my head stoved in, and I'm on my feet. I'm still willing to go from Tucson to Tucumcari, Tatchapee to Tonopah. Drive any kind of rig that you can make, and I'll drive on the back road so I won't get weighed if they give me weed, whites, and wine. And then he showed me a sign. I'll be willing to get moving. Yet another version of Willin', as they say.
Pete, what have you guys been up to?
Well, these guys have been playing in another band, and I've been playing by myself. And there's where I get to put my plug in. I'll be at the Sands in Las Vegas. No, I'll be at I'll be at Farragher's Back Room to the 29th and 30th, which is on South Taylor Road for all you West Siders. And it's a really nice place. And I'll be there with Ron Franklin, who won't be playing with me, but he'll be playing the same night. And hopefully, if I can get my little friend to come down from Toronto, I'll have a fiddle player with me, which is always a lot of fun.
Yeehaw.
You know, you can square dance, yeah, you're right. It evokes all the hillbilly memories. So that'll be the Temporal Worth High Steppers with Pete Lochner at Farragher's. I keep changing these names. You know,
thank you. the griddle, the crab, and the fiddle in the red. Sun sinking into a whale, way, 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 way out in blue jail, in salty blue jail. Seaweed beard from bone tree. Oh, you're Neptonic cacophonic poetry. I'll do nothing to you. Nautical ghoul, well, the dolphins do your work, and the mermaids stir your gruel. Seaweed beard from bone tree.
For Pedro Show, we started the second hour off. Zola Jeans is doing Soak. John Amplis, Leavell, Jake Calcutt after that with Shit Alley. Some spoken word, England. Mega Doubt featuring Simone A. They're out of Trieste. Suisse Tot Bora. Peter Lochner, I'm Willing. Old Cleveland scene. Herman Gray is Tom Herman, who's having me aboard for a proj. That's incredible because... Man, did Minutemen love Pere Ubu, that modern dance record. And Cat B.
Love Pere Ubu.
Yeah, incredible band. They did the modern dance. In fact, I found out later that the drummer man forgot where they parked the boat, the van. They didn't, yeah, it was hard. Was it a quick getaway? Whiskey to go-go. David Thomas was had a rail spike and a hammer. That beats a cowbell. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Right. And then Seaweed Beard Foam Bone Tree. Yeah, that's a Cat Beefheart. Read some poems right after quit music and start just painting. And then Doma, Zola Jesus. You know, Doma, we got a big Croatia community here. So, yeah, the church, the house. We got
cool.
A Hrvatski
yeah.
Dome. Yeah, so Slavic language, right?
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I think even the big church in Cologne, they call it Duomo. And
I think it is often, yeah, Duomo too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Duomo, yeah, Italiano, yeah.
Italiano.
Right, right. But let's get back to your music journey. Okay, when did the Zola Jesus start, that persona for you?
That started, well, the persona started when I was 14. Wow. And then the music started when I was 19, I think.
And what's the connect?
What's the what?
Connect.
What's the connect?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the connect. You mean from 14 to 19?
And this persona, because you said it wasn't, it wasn't musical at first.
Yeah, so I mean, I was kind of a weird kid. So when I left middle school and went into high school, I just came up with this, in the interim, I came up with this name Zola Jesus because I discovered Emile Zola. And I just,
oh, yeah, the poet.
And I was a fan of Teenage Jesus and the Jerks and Jesus and Mary Chain and, you know, all Jesus Lizard, all the Jesus bands. So then I was just like, I just decided that this name, Zola Jesus, I don't know, I just liked it. So I told people to call me Zola Jesus. They alienated me and ostracized me even more after that. And then when I started making music, I was like, oh, I already have this Zola Jesus, like, moniker. So I just applied that to my music. And, you know, because it was inspired by so many bands.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that was the right idea or not, but here we are.
Do you have any of those 45s from Teenage Jesus and the Jerks?
I don't know if 45s, but I do have some records. I don't know if they're compilations, but I have, like, a couple.
Like Orphans?
I don't think I have Orphans. Okay. I have one that's, like, I think it's almost like a split.
Orphans
with,
running through the bloody snow. Orphans running through. Well, anyway, if you look on there, it's got Big Jim. He plays with Bad Seeds right now, Nick Cave. But it just says drum. The guy just plays snare drum.
See, but this is where, like, this is the beginning of my musical journey, is just being like, okay, so my first band was, like, me on vocals, and then I had someone on guitar and bass, and then my brother played the tom drum. And for, like,
play drum. Okay.
3 years, drum, just tom drum. Because I was like, you don't need any, what do you need, like, what do you need a kick for if you have a tom? Just get a floor tom. You're done.
It's a lot easier tearing it down and setting up.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah.
What a trip. Yeah, well, you know, the lady was Lydia Lunch.
Mm-hmm.
She was the lady behind Teenage Jesus. And very interesting, very provocative. If I could think of one lady in a movie that I think of when I think of Lydia, it's Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, wow. Interesting, yeah.
She's a very provocative lady, but she's a great artist.
Yeah.
Great artist. She had a band after that called Eight Eye Spy, and she did some collaborations with the guys in the Birthday Party and Thurston and stuff. And that's so great that you're hip to that, because that was so small.
Well, that's what really opened me up, is discovering, like, No Wave and, like, Diamond Glass and, Mars, DNA, like, Fetus, like, all that, like, the New York stuff.
Yeah.
Was really exciting, because it was aggressive, and I liked punk. Like, I was kind of coming from a punk angle, but then it was, like, gnarly and weird and minimalist and, like, unhinged, and I loved it.
I want to play Lick the Palm of the Burning Handshake by you.
I'm not afraid to die. Thank you.
has this, when it's really good, it lasts forever. And you're going to pick up fans. Eventually, people are going to be born, and they're going to be born into Kate Bush fans, you know, whatever, whoever it is.
She had quit and raised a family, right?
Yeah, I think she really, like, she stepped out for a minute. And then, you know,
but came back, and then people were open-minded. It wasn't like, oh, I'm not of your generation. It's more universal. It's transcended through generations.
Yeah.
That was something. That's my 70s group of people were too narcissists. We wouldn't even listen to shit 5 years old. I remember seeing that Woodstock movie, and Sha Na comes on, and people are like booing. And they're booing a movie. Like, this is my dad's music. Fuck this shit. Can you believe that? And it was only like, what, 10 years old? Now a kid will like...
Well, there was a lot more tribalism back then, probably.
Yeah, but on different levels. I think there's a little tribalism now. It's on a different level.
Yeah. It's different.
But as far as the arts and music, it's a lot more open-minded. I'm not saying everything's solved and fixed, but it's a lot more open-minded. And somebody like you who knows about fucking New Wave. Well, you know New Wave, but you also know No Wave. And you know Lydia.
Yeah.
And you know DNA. Wow. Ikue Mori, the drummer lady, she didn't even know how to play. She just went for it. Balls out.
She's amazing.
Okay, so we heard Lick the Palm of the Burning Handshakes, Oh Jesus. God is Not a Mountain from Imadwasi. Ritual number 3, Timothy Eary, The Blank Taste, Don't You Feel. Kevlar Bikini out of Croatia with Ballerina Toes. And finally, Hikikimori. Oh Jesus. You know what a Hikikimori is, right?
Oh, yeah.
They never go up, they never leave their pad.
I mean... I feel that. We're all hikikomori right now.
Yeah, right. So. Now, you were saying, you were asking me off air, what my opinion of the current mood is with the music. And it's like a little cynical. And I think you're right. But I do also think there's a lot of stuff going on that's kind of bubbling under the surface, too.
Totally.
And one good thing we have now that we didn't have in those days is the internet. It was I literally had to go into the studio with the person. Now you can trade files. I mean, that was impossible before. So there's some good and there's bad.
There's a lot of good, but I feel like maybe just the entire mood of our culture right now is kind of very cynical.
Yeah.
There's a hopelessness to it, but it's so hopeless that it's sort of like it's cynical. That's just the best way to put it. People are just doing what they got to do. And
you remember that,
God bless them.
You remember that album Pink Floyd did called Dark Side of the Moon?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of little voices and shit. And at the very end, you hear this voice go, you know, there is no dark side of the moon. It's all dark.
Oh,
that's pretty bleak, right? That's pretty bleak.
That's my kind of guy. or voice.
Now, you know why it is the dark side of the moon?
Why?
Because it rotates the same time it takes to go around the Earth, so we never see the other side.
Ah, yeah. I thought it was always had to do with the sun.
No, it has to do with the way it turns. Like, we turn in 24 hours, but it takes us 365 days, right?
Theirs
is exactly the same, so we never get to see that other side. And that's why some scientists think it was actually from us. It was a chunk after we got hit with something and came out. But anyway, I'm getting off the track. Do you remember your first gig that wasn't a vocal competition? Like with your brother and shit, playing in front of people.
Playing?
Yeah.
Well, I played like talent shows and stuff as a child, but then... My first show is as Zola Jesus would be my first like show with my own music and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was in the basement of a pizza parlor in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, Madison. Okay. So Lake Mendota, right?
That's right.
It's an isthmus, but in the wintertime, it must be really neat when the wind blows.
Oh, it was freaking cold. It was super
cold. You're in the basement of the so was there was good smells.
Really good pizza. Glass Nickel, shout out. Not sponsored.
Okay, you know there's a great drummer who's lived the rest of his life there. A funky drummer, right? Clyde Stubblefield. We lost him last
really?
Year.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was on tour with Jim Brown, and they had a gig there, and he said, fuck it, I'm going to live here. And he was doing like every Monday night. He's like one of the most sampled drummers ever, that funky drummer thing.
I had no idea.
Well, that's why I wanted you on the show so you could learn that.
Yeah, I'm like freaking notes over here, man.
2020 special guest, Negan, hold tight for hour three. May 11, 2020, it's the third hour. The Watt from Pedro show. Walk for Pedro Show, third hour, started off with Tell It to the Widow, Zola Jesus. How old were you when you wrote that?
Tell It to the Widow. I was probably 19, 20.
Fuck. Wise beyond your years. Usually you have to...
It's called being lonely.
Okay. And imaginative. Yeah. So, Euphoria's Destination with Rendezvous after that. Pittman Green, Decision Baby Makes Mustache by the Loyals. Excuse me. Sorry. Get talking to each other at the same time. Why? Chris Burns out of Canada with Poor Lara. Andre Vita out of Berlin. Slow Down and Zola Jesus Orthodox. Wait, tell me the recording process. How do you do it, Mika?
Well, back in that day, like from Tell It to the Widow and stuff like that, yeah. That was just me on my bed with computer and some keyboards and stuff. But these days, it evolves based on what my ambitions are. So I'll go to a studio or I'll record things at home or, you know.
You're in northern Wisconsin and they got studios up.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I say studio, I mean I have a house and I have a room in my house that has a computer in it and a microphone and some speakers.
Oh, okay.
So that's my version of a studio.
No, hey, it's good enough, right?
I mean, I've recorded a bunch of stuff in LA and stuff.
If you ask me, these records sound incredible. I mean, they're kicking. But there's a lot of stuff I find people right out of their bedrooms are doing some good stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why I asked about it. Oh, so you've come to L.A. to record.
Yeah. So I'll go to studios there. I was actually supposed to be in L.A. a month ago recording drums for my next record with this guy, Matt Chamberlain. But
I don't – you know what? He grew up in Pedro.
Really?
I wouldn't shit you.
That's amazing.
Matt Chamberlain grew up – in fact, my second man drummer, Jared Trebetich, grew up with him. And
that's
so, Matt,
insane.
I think he moved back. You know, he was in Seattle for a long time. He's in Hollywood again. Not again.
That's crazy.
He wanted to move to Pedro, but his wife wanted to be in Hollywood, he told me. So.
Aww.
But he's a good drummer. I got to do all of the fucking Maggot Brain album at the Viper Room with George Clinton and Doug Wimbish, Blackbird McKnight, Kid Funkadelic. I couldn't believe it.
What?
I thought it was going to be a blues jam in E minor, and it turned out... Yeah, Matt Chamberlain was the drummer. So you had ask him about that. Wow, what a small world.
Very small world.
So what happens when you do that? Do you, like, kind of direct him?
Yeah, well, I haven't worked with him yet. We've only been working remotely, but I was supposed to come down there, and I'm working with this co-producer on my next record, and his name is Randall Dunn. Okay. And so he's friends with Matt, and so he hooked us up, and we were all going to go down there and I have a bunch of recorded drums, and then I want him to kind of, like, take that as inspiration for what I programmed, but then just, like, go far beyond whatever I'm capable of as a programmer.
So that's what you do with the musicians. You kind of give them little, like, a demo or something, and then you ask them to take it from there?
Yeah, usually. Or if they're, like, string players, usually I'll just, like, write something and have them play it. But lately I've been more interested in getting people's, really letting people, like, explore what they're good at and doing that because, you know, I'm not that talented, so I'm not as...
Come on.
You know what I mean? But, I mean, there's an aspect about being a solo artist where you kind of have to be, like, a drummer, a bassist, a keyboardist, a vocalist, a producer, engineer, and there's a point at which, you know, I can do some things, but I can't do them as well as these other people that devote their lives to it, so
I
want to, like...
You want to delegate out stuff to people with it's got some focus on there, but still you got the big picture, so I think that's important too. You need somebody in the wheelhouse, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I want to play Lightstick here.
ideas of pretension. I don't care about loss and contempt.
Come on. Remember the very best times we had. Let's not forget them. Nothing could be that sad. When times are weird like now, they will make you glad. We've all got hours to let our minds roam free. Sometimes our best times were never, ever planned. Might have been a party or by a lake, a desert sand. When someone found you on a trip you took unplanned. We used to wander the world and we'd see places you'd dream of, perfect weather, beauty. No Schoenstein, the Louvre, the Tivoli, buildings like Gaudi could bring ecstasy. I'm going faster now. Life's not just for show. We see more meaning now. Someday we hope to know. We tried to find the best books and films to see. Art and photography, architecture, great cuisine. We love to see design in cities that we adore. Paris, London, and Berlin, Tokyo, and more. We hope that those we love will last a while. Remember laughter, recall a certain smile. There's so much beauty left in the world to see. Our job in life is research mystery. There's so much left to learn before we take our rest. Like, how did you meet the one you love best? We hope our friendship will last a while, laughing and joking, and will we still be able to
you know, I want to be in control, but there's an aspect of collaboration that I think is being lost. The more people are, like, sequestered in their bedrooms making music on their computers,
yeah.
you know, you're not going to get a Clive Stubblefield anymore. You're not going to get this real musicianship of collaboration and being in the room with someone and really feeding off the energy and feeding off of their lifetime of experience as a musician, you know? And I think that that's, like, that needs to be preserved, and I have respect for that, so.
That makes good sense. It really does. And it's from your experience. It's not just the theory. That's really great.
Yeah.
We heard Lightstick, Zola Jesus, Ecstasy of the Fire Snake from Med Mass, Mike Rignetto with Half Depth, V-Vale, Memories, Chinese Herbal Medicine with Ed, and finally, Sower Sewer. Did I pronounce that right?
Sower Sewer? I don't know, yeah.
Sir.
So,
where can people find you on the internet?
If you just type in Zola Jesus, ZolaJesus.com, Instagram.com/ZolaJesus, Twitter.com. You know, if you just
put it on
a website.
You do have your own website, right?
ZolaJesus.com.
That's so important. Because to me, that's like having your own fucking fanzine. There's no middleman.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, right? No filter. You could stick your flyers on all those other telephone poles. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's so great that you got your own fanzine.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And that way you have the total residents of 1976, you know, 77, the movement, you know. Well, I'm going to put out my zine, and nobody's going to tell me what to write. And I'm curious, what's next for you? You were going to do these drums with Matt. So you got a new album planned?
Got a new album planned, yep.
And just
waiting to work on that, but I need people for that. So, yeah, just kind of sitting and waiting.
Well, like Orson Welles said, right? No wine before it's time. But
it was always time for Orson Welles. We know that.
I met him once at Pink's by a hot dog stand up in Hollywood.
I used to live near Pink's.
On Melrose and La Brea. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I used to live a couple blocks from
Pink's. I don't know, early 80s or something. He's got chili dog in each hand. I go, Mr. Welles. He goes, young man, I'd like to shake your hand, but I am busy.
Oh, my God. That is an awesome story.
And he's huge, you know.
If you're going to meet Orson Welles doing anything, he's holding two Pink's hot dogs in his hand. Like,
and he was a big man. Not just wide, but tall. Yeah, he's big. Barn door. So, this new record that needs people, how's it different from these old, these previous guys' records?
I've been feeling very, you make a record, like your first record's super easy in a way because you're just doing whatever. And then it's all new, you know, and it was fun for the first couple records, but with each collection of songs, I have to dig deeper and deeper and like really like, you know, find new ways in to the source.
Sure.
So that's been a process, but also just really wanted to embrace collaboration, embrace approaching my musicality differently, like just really getting in there. I mean, this is one aspect of the record that I just feel like talking about, but I just keep trying to get closer to doing my life justice.
Do you meet musicians younger than you?
Not as often. All my friends are usually that are in the music scene are like 10 to 20 years older than me.
So they're less younger.
Yes, they're less younger.
Well, if somebody who was more younger asked you for advice about this music racket, what would you tell them?
I'd say don't count on anything. I mean, if as a musician, just embrace. I would urge anyone, young or old, to just embrace like their truest form, and not try to assimilate or fit in. You know, and I've had that pressure as someone that makes poppier music. And I'm like, oh, maybe I can be like Britney Spears. And then, you know, I know that that's inevitably not going to happen because I'm just not that person. you know, I can't like go from knowing Diamanda Galas and Lydia Lunch exist and then like trying to play arenas like and work with Live Nation and like be on the cover of Vogue or whatever. It's like, I just, my like the insides of me don't know how to do that. But yeah, just trust your voice.
That's great advice, really. And it's been such an honor to have you on the show, truly, Nika.
Thank you.
When you get done with this record, can you come back on and we talk about it? I'm curious to see what it takes to make this.
100%.
Okay. People, it's been May 11, 2020, the Dishwap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.